Good afternoon. Today is Friday, October the 19th, 287th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon from... What are you today? You brought notes.
Well, in the distant past, when we just had an occasional gig, I was the water gal. But yeah. I think I'll do a formal introduction.
Okay, fine, sure.
Carol Riesch, general manager of the Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District, and really appreciate the opportunity, Brian.
That's a long title.
That's why you probably abbreviate it to water gal. A little bit easier, isn't it?
Oh, this afternoon, Carol is now going to be one of our regulars as Arnie Herskovic relocated. He and Karen left, I think, about 6 weeks ago, down to the somewhere around Guerneville. So he's working out of the Willits office for SHN. So we wanted to get in somebody who was kind of involved, infrastructure still involved, so to speak. And certainly water is one of those topical areas that more and more we realize what resource it is in our area. So Carol's on board. I think for the initial program, talking about the history of what the district was, where it came from, all that kind of stuff, what it is you guys do, and why aren't you the guys who send me the bill? Could be a general basis of a start of a wonderful relationship.
Well, it always is a good relationship, Brian. Yeah. The Water District really appreciates the opportunity. I think this is a wonderful show for the community to learn a little bit about Talk Shop. We get to Talk Shop. City, county, private businesses, so really appreciate it.
All right, so the kiss-up is now done. We'll be back talking about water with Carol.
I'm Mark Biette with today's garden tip about not being a prunomaniac. The conscientious gardener needs to know that each kind of plant has its own best time to be pruned. Avoid shearing flowering plants into shapes which really look unnatural. Thin flowering shrubs with a hand pruner. I'm Mark Biette with today's garden tip.
You've got to get up pretty early in the morning to hear Mark Biette and his wealth of gardening knowledge. 5 to 7 a.m. Sundays on KWSW 980.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Times 314. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon. It's a Friday. Jeez, Louise. With Carol Riesch. Not Louise Riesch. You don't have a Louise in your family, do you?
I don't, Brian.
Okay, well, then I didn't confuse you with anybody.
And I'm not a cop either.
Yeah, I know. It's just, yeah. I've got a new career for you.
That'd be scary. That line would be scary. Don't worry, Merle. I'm not coming after your job.
Our quote this afternoon comes from Richard Lewis. Most Texans think that Hanukkah is some sort of a duck call.
What?
You laughed when you heard it.
I did, and there's kind of a water theme there. You know, ducks need water.
Yeah. Something has to flow off their back, right?
There you go.
Yeah. What's the biggest misnomer, Carol, about the Water District?
I don't know if it's a misnomer, but I don't know that a lot of people know who we are and know what we do because we, as you know, you kind of introduced a bit ago, we work at the wholesale level. We supply the water, treat it, deliver it to the cities and community service districts who then deliver it to all of you listening out there in your homes and businesses. So probably not as much a misnomer as a lack of understanding.
What's the why does it exist?
Well, there's a very interesting history here, and it's kind of, I think, a very cool story in history for our region and our community. A lot of the large water infrastructure in the state of California was built by and driven by the state and federal governments. People may have heard of the State Water Project or the Central Valley Project. There's quite a bit of news about that now, given a proposed peripheral canal through the Delta, for example. But what's really cool in our case is the entire impetus and design and building and financing was driven and done locally. And yet we have a pretty amazing regional water system that provides reliable supply at very high quality water. So it really is one of the stories and gems for our local community to have an asset in the regional system.
Could it be done today?
Really difficult. You'd hope that being closer to home and local would make it easier, but let me just share with you a couple statistics. When the district was formed back in 56, it was led by the Chamber of Commerce and then the county and the city of Eureka. So you had the business and community leaders looking for an opportunity and a need. When they got organized and all the people back then did the work, they put it to a vote of the people in March 56. Guess what percent of the voters approved it?
52.
89. Really? When today do we agree on something?
Wait a minute, 89?
89%.
And nobody stuffed the ballot box.
Nobody stuffed, well, as far as I know.
Yeah. Records don't indicate. Yeah, okay.
It's an interesting thing because at that point it was this concept of forming a district with the hope of building a regional water system. It wasn't even yet you knew that you were going to get the regional water system out of the deal.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And within 6 months... they had done work to figure out how much money we would have to secure in general obligation bonds to, in fact, build the regional system. I mean, a dam, a bunch of pumping and, 52-inch pipes, almost as tall as you, Brian.
52.
We could almost put you in a 52-inch pipe.
That is pretty large.
But in 6 months, they put a general obligation bond on the ballot, and, 69% of the voters voted for it. So could we do it today? I would hope because it would be for the community, by the community, you'd have a chance, but I don't think you'd ever see that kind of support for this concept and building something of that magnitude in today's times.
I'm just thinking of all the consternation that the general plan is attempting to do, and the stuff that Dave and the guys at the city, and then Jimmy and I guess now Rexy with the county, with the water and the sewer up by the golf course in Eureka.
Yeah.
Is causing.
Yeah.
You'd probably be looking at 10 to 15 years of public hearings.
Yeah.
Before you could even go to step one.
Right. Well, it's a lot of things. It's the community involvement is really good. And community and public involvement is important. It's necessary. And it can be very constructive. But sometimes it isn't. It plays out in less than, efficient or constructive ways, as we all know in this community. So there's that aspect. Again, much more difficult permitting and environmental processes today, some of which are very appropriate to protect the environment. But sometimes there's things that are just, kind of crazy of what you have to go through and what it takes and the cost it adds. So there's a lot of things that I think would be different.
Don't forget the excitement.
Oh, but anyway,
okay, you want to forget the excitement.
But anyway, appreciate the opportunity to talk about the history because I wouldn't expect most folks to know that because of the leadership and a community coming together, we've got this incredible assets that we as citizens and businesses really have benefited from.
Okay, and the fact that you're here too.
Mm-hmm.
All right, she went with it. KINS, News and Information Times, 319.
There's a brand new show on KEKA 101 Thunder Country, Country Gold with Randy Owen, Sunday evenings from 8 till midnight. It's a 4-hour intensive music show hosted by the lead vocalist of the group Alabama. Country Gold will feature 13 songs per hour and highlighted music from the 70s to the mid-90s. Be sure to listen to KEKA 101 Thunder Country, Sunday evening from 8 till midnight. Country Gold with Randy Owen.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Carol Reese. You're sitting
at
attention. Mike's come on. All of a sudden you go professional on me.
Well, I just don't want to be, 3 feet back in the echo chamber.
Well, you just pull the microphone back with you.
Well, that's true. Okay.
Don't worry about it.
Okay. I'm kind of learning the gigs here, Brian. Cut me a little slack.
So I think a lot of folks, Carol, when they find out about the history, the first thing they will go to is this was all locally funded?
Yes.
How could that be? When we look at the development cost in the general plan as a reference, 20 to 25% of what the total cost is of the property or the structure and property are attributable specifically to development fees.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. Big chunkies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, you multiply that times the number of properties that have access to water, either directly or second tier, mm-hmm. through your customers. Holy Toledo. I mean, it would be, what's the phrase? Choke a horse? The magnitude of this thing, how were they able to do that?
Well, you've hit on a couple of the key points, Brian. First of all, again, it was a lot of money back then, $12 million, but you have to inflation adjusted, but that was still a much lower amount than it would be in today's times, in my professional opinion, even inflation adjusted, number one. Number two, the dollars oftentimes did go a little further, directly on the infrastructure. But the other thing is the original general obligation bonds had a 40-year term. So not unlike, you know, we're borrowing money for, you know, at our personal level for our homes, we're able to spread it out over 40 years. And compared to most other local governments in our county, we're one of the larger ones, which you've probably heard the term rate base. We have a larger rate base. Your denominator, when you do the math, is bigger. You know, we're the second largest district in the county after the harbor districts, whose boundaries are contiguous with the Board of Supervisors. We're the next largest district in size and area. So we had a larger rate base that we could spread it out. So a lot of it's lower cost, relatively speaking, the term, 40 years, and more people you can spread it out over.
How many customers or accounts do you guys have?
Well, again, we operate at the wholesale level. Yeah. So now, but then that was a tax assessment. So the people
at that time, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question, what the county population would have been in our service district. I don't have the exact number, but still, compared to you gave an example of the general plan. A lot of those projects or developments are much more localized.
Yeah, 10, 15 slots.
Yeah, or even if the Forester Gill, you're looking at whatever level of development in that, you know, Cutton, Eureka interface, but it's just there versus we were
much more larger. Yeah. The dam's name
is R.W. Matthews, who was our first president, and he was one of those community leaders from the Chamber of Commerce.
He was one of the putting stirs?
Yes.
You get it going? Okay.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. Yeah.
What's the condition of the dam?
Really good. There's a very rigorous dam safety program regulated by both the state and federal governments, dual regulation.
Oh, boy. I just go pitter-patter there.
Yeah, but it's been well-maintained. It was well-constructed, very rigorous safety programs. The dam itself in very good shape.
Because of that attention or because of the initial design?
A lot of it's the initial. Well, it's a little bit of both. I mean, you have to pay attention, otherwise infrastructure degrades. But it was a good design, well-constructed, and then good maintenance practices over the years.
I think we most perceive of an earthen dam.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, visions of West Virginia, floods, gorge,
right.
Tidal wave coming, or a wall of water.
Mm-hmm.
Are any of those applicable in this scenario?
No, or hopefully no. If you want to get into a little bit like what the risks are, the biggest risk is if you had a flood that blocked the natural spillway, there's a concrete spillway that lets the water out. If that ever gets blocked, that's when if you overtop an earth dam, back to the sort of actual experience and images, that's when you have a problem. So we've taken a lot of measures to make sure that spillway in a winter never gets blocked. And at some point, I mean, just throw this out for kicks, John Winsler, who co-founder of Winsler & Kelly Consulting Engineers, now GHD, has been the longtime district engineer. He was flown up there in the 64 flood, and it's kind of a very interesting story. So if that's of interest to you and your listenership, we could have a history story there. But it's a
bring
pretty
the old
fun,
man in.
Bring him in. It's a very cool story of firsthand experience and what happened and what he went through in the 64 flood for the district.
Because I would think that's probably the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
The heavy pack.
Absolutely. Yep.
The dam halfway full beforehand.
All full already. Full.
Here it comes. Yeah.
Exactly. That's you nailed it. That's the snowpack and then the pineapple type connection already on flood conditions. Exactly.
So as you play, I know in the flood plans you talk about a 100-year flood.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Was that the 100-year flood? Is that the worst case scenario, or do you have to anticipate even more gross situations in order to ensure that this thing will remain intact?
Well, I believe, I can't speak from a pure statistic and return frequency of 64 is 100 year. I mean, I could back at the office figure that out, but 64 is close, I think, a reasonable, like, worst case scenario for us to plan. As part of the federal dam safety program, though, we've had to generate floods far in excess of that based on standards they prescribe you must meet. For anybody technical in the audience or with meteorological background, it's the HMR, Hydrological Meteorological Standard 59.
That would be Troy?
Troy, yeah, Troy, Nancy, any of you over at our Friends of the Weather Service listening. So we had to assume certain meteorological conditions to generate a flood, which was far in excess of the 64 flood, and show that our spillway could pass it. And
still
it did,
okay.
Not by a lot. I mean, it was but squeaked by, yeah.
KINS News, squeaky dam gets the what? It's 3:30. We'll be back with more from Carol Reisch.
There's never been a clear winner in the so-called battle of the sexes, but in the battle for bacteria-free hands, one half of the population is germier than the other. So whose hands are cleaner, men or women? Hi, I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and here's to your health. The researchers tested 51 college students using a new detailed system for detecting bacterial DNA. But remember, most of the bacteria in our bodies is either harmless or beneficial.
Dr. Hoffman answers some of your health questions on Health Talk, Saturday mornings, 9 to 11 on KWSW 980 AM.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and information time is 3:36. Lighthearted, that is the key. Join us this afternoon. It's Carol Reich from the Water District. Carol, we were talking a little bit about the dam. Now, I think a lot of people, particularly in our area, they're familiar with the Klamath Dam system and the challenges in the upper echelons and who gets the water and who doesn't. Does all the water coming out of or from the dam come to Humboldt County residents? Is this where the diversion for the Russian River out of the Eel comes into play? Is there any connection there? Is the MAD entirely for those who haven't been to the dam?
Yeah, the MAD River, good question, Brian. The MAD River is an entirely distinct watershed, separate from the Klamath Trinity, separate from the Eel and Russian, and it's a very narrow watershed running in a northwesterly direction. And all the water that's released either through the reservoir, like a lot of the year we don't control it. It comes in and out because it's kind of a small reservoir and just comes right in and spills.
You just open it up and let it rip?
We don't even open it up. It just goes right over that spillway.
Oh, okay.
It just literally kind of just hangs for a little bit of time in Ruth Lakes and goes on its way, if in a simplistic sense. Or in the summer is when we're managing the releases, you know, for our needs. But it all stays in the Mad River. So we're capturing it. In a way, it's what the way to think about a reservoir is we capture it such that we can use it at a different time of the year. But it's all in the Mad River, and that's distinct from the other watersheds.
So when we drive along 299 and we see the cement thing in the middle of the river.
That's called a rainy collector.
How is that different from, or what function does that provide that the dam doesn't?
Well, the dam, again, is just a mechanism to collect, as some people have said, just a beaker of water, if you will, or it's a storage vessel for water that we capture in the winter and then we can use in the summer and fall. And so we release a certain amount of water, and down here, those big concrete things that you talked about in 299, they're not the prettiest thing, I might add, but they're very important.
It's okay, they're graffiti-free.
They are
graffiti-free.
That looks
real good.
No, that's true. That's a good point. Those are the start of our drinking water system. So basically, those caissons are sunk down below the bed of the river, and from them, a series of laterals, kind of work 90 degrees from that, perforated laterals, collect the drinking water about 60 to 90 feet below the bed of the river. And that is the start of our community's drinking water system. So our releases from Ruth are recharging the aquifer below the Mad River, and those kick in to deliver water to yours and my house.
So when we had the Y2K concerns, okay, and or the EMP, you know, the pulse thing that's being talked about, if that happens, or the motors burn up, I mean, take your pick, whatever scenario, what happens then? Does the water not get into our drinking faucets, or is the gravity fed, is there a design for gravity feed through some of the system?
Well, you're bringing up a couple of concepts. So we are, if those collectors and there's pumps on them work, we pump up through a treatment plant and storage reservoirs. From there, it is gravity feed to all of our clients, the cities and community service district. But if all of the pumps out on those concrete caissons don't work, no, there's no other gravity feed and we can't operate the system. But we have redundancy. We have four of those rainy collectors, and each of them has two or three pumps on them. So there's some redundancy built in. So you would hope it would be pretty catastrophic for the whole thing to not work.
How do you build one of those things? I mean, you said 60 to 90 feet below the riverbed. Now, I would suppose it would be really, really difficult to put one of those things in today.
Well, Sonoma County, our water agency, kind of our sister regional water supplier down in Sonoma, just put a new one in the last 3-4 years. It is huge. Now there they built it off not in the river channel like most of ours are, but their laterals project even longer into the Russian River. It's a our superintendent and I have had a chance to tour it. It's a pretty impressive facility and much larger than ours. So you can do it today. A lot of them are located right adjacent to the river.
So they're not having to divert the water.
Right, well, we didn't divert it. You just built in the stream channel.
When they did it originally?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Really.
So it's not like a bridge where they have to do those.
Well, they would have. Well, again, you would have tended. Again, I believe they would have been done in the summer, fall when the
low flow, get the backhoe out there, dig the channel, and let the water go around.
Yeah, and even if you think back to when, again, getting back to when we start with history, when the district was formed, those rainy collectors were being built concurrently with Matthews Dam. It was that first $12 million built, that first infrastructure. We didn't have the dam where we're releasing water in summer yet, so there wasn't as much water in the river. But okay. it was a big construction project, you know, for Humboldt County, and it was those rainies are a patented kind of technology from France, and other than the Ohio Valley, there's very few of them, and we have a small segment of them on the West Coast, Crescent City, Ukiah, Sonoma County Water Agency, and us. But there's very few of them in the United States.
Where's Crescent City? Is it in the Smith?
I assume so.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't be.
I've not seen theirs. I've been to Ukiah's. I've been to Sonoma County Water Agencies, but there's a lot of them in the Ohio Valley, and then not a lot in the rest of the country. But it was a patented technology, French design.
I'll put it in the 50s, about the same time frame.
I'm not 100% sure if they were all in the 50s, but definitely 50s, 60s, could be early 70s on the West Coast.
KINS News and Information Time. Was that the guy's name, Rainey?
Yes, that's where it came from.
Good, not weather.
Correct.
Yeah, unless that was his nickname, and then it really goes sideways. It's 3:42. We'll be back with more from Carol Reese.
Water always wins. That's why there's a Grand Canyon. I'm Glenn Higgy, America's master handyman. Keeping water away from your home's foundation is one of the most important things you can do. If your home is on a crawl space, you need to know what is going on under your feet. Your home's structural integrity and your family's health may depend on it.
Listen to Glenn Higgy, Sunday morning, 7 to 8 a.m. on KWSW 980.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:46. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon.
So,
with
Brian,
Carol
how
Reese.
Come every time we're ending on the break, you're laughing?
That's people have said who have been on this side of the microphone that the best conversations happen during the breaks.
Well, not my first time. I've been a guest a few times, so I'll
you vouch for that one.
Yeah, I can vouch for that.
I mean, certain things you can say, and certain things you're timing. Yes. Is probably not accurate. If somebody wants to take a tour of the dam, can they just show up at Ruth and wander around and get a pretty good sense? Is it something you guys encourage? Do they have to leap the Stalag fence line to see?
The dam is really easy to see. When you're first driving up, if you're paying attention, you really see it on your right. There is a public road that goes over it, so you can walk on it, you can see it. Though the dam itself is really easy. The one thing that is gated and secured is we have a hydro plant at the base of the dam, and the base of the dam, that is restricted. I would offer, though, if there are people who at some point would like a tour, we'd be happy to, you know, arrange a time or a date where we could provide a tour of the hydro plant. We've done that for our operating facility out on the river and our treatment plant, and we do a lot more tours for schools. We didn't used to do as much of this. We're much more out there in the K-12 system, and we also have linkages now to both CR and HSU and some of their engineering and water and wastewater program, where every class comes through. We've got an internship program now with HSU, so we've tried to be better about offering that to, kind of the educational community, and have made some real inroads.
Now you said wastewater, and I think a lot of people immediately think sewage.
Those are kind of related.
Yeah. So when you say wastewater plant,
That's what I'm talking. Yeah,
you're talking about
industry. Yeah, that's the industry, if you will, tends to be called water and wastewater industry. But yeah, sewage.
not stormwater runoff.
Right.
See, I've been hanging around too many government types.
You have.
I know the distinction.
Too many public work types.
I guess. Now the hydro plant at the bottom of the dam.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds to me like there's something being generated if there's a hydro plant.
Yeah.
Okay. Where does that go?
We sell it to PG&E system, and the revenues we generate, we credit back to our customer. So any revenues we generate other than selling water, we credit back to our customer, so it offsets the cost.
Was that part of the initial design and one of the things that sold it?
No, that came in the 80s. I think it went in about 83, if I remember the exact year correctly.
And it's working okay?
Yeah, we're not getting paid nearly enough. No disrespect to my PG&E friends out there and my former employer. Very different pricing structure for when you're a small power producer selling and when you're a consumer. And that, let me tell you, they're not even close to the same. And it's a very depressed market for small renewable power. We're actually working both on it, kind of advocacy through our associations that we've got to do something, especially with the state's renewable standard, but also we've got to have more contract options available. I mean, technically right now we're losing money on the hydro facility, and it's kind of hard to believe that.
Well, maybe we can strike a deal. I've got a tower out that part of the country. We might be able to.
You need one out there. Yeah. Since we were talking towers on the break, you need one out there. We might be able to talk or work together.
If somebody wants to know more about the history, is this easy to come by, or is this more oral history? What? How would somebody want to find out about the dam and about the early years?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and we've tried to start collecting and compiling some of it. John Winsler has been a tremendous asset. We don't have a lot on our website. I could look to put more on. The Humboldt Historian magazine, the Historical Society, did a segment, really nice segment. They had done one on Eureka's water supply, which came from Swayze and Matthews before, but they did a great article. We'll put that on our website.
Well, there's your idea. Cheap ideas for an hour of time. Hope it was wise investment for you.
Absolutely. I'll be back next month.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, there you go. Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Love. See you tomorrow morning.
Thanks. Give me the...